This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Are you there, Sam?
Yep, hang on, I'm just turning that on.
Is our guest ready?
Yep, I've got the music ready.
Can you hear me okay?
Yep, sounds great.
Cool. Otago Access Radio, in partnership with Otago Polytechnic, brings you Blowing Bubbles.
Blowing Bubbles brings you positive conversations with people in their bubbles around the world.
We're curious about how people are finding new ways of life, being and problem solving. Every Wednesday, the Sustainable Lens team of Samuel Mann and Mawira Karatai reach out from our bubbles to chat with interesting and positive people around the world.
Broadcast on Otago Access Radio, 105.4 FM in Dunedin, and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz.
Bringing joy, connection, kindness and peace in all the days ahead.
Welcome to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. I am Samuel Mann and I am joined by somebody who was on our very first show. Andy Thompson, welcome, Andy.
Kia ora koutou, and thanks for having me back. It's exciting to be back.
Is it 4 years ago? Almost 4 years plus 2 months.
I was trying to figure that out the other day, but no, it was quite a while ago. I guess, it doesn't sound that long, but it feels like a long time I was on here last time. But, yeah.
So a lot has happened.
A lot has happened, absolutely. Yeah, I can't... I'm trying to think back, but interestingly, when I was talking to you last, was I running to Patoera? Or maybe I was still at the Sports Institute.
No, I think you're on the island.
No, was I?
Yeah, you talked to us on the island.
Oh my gosh. Oh, was it then? So I talked to you before that as well. Then. Yes, oh my gosh. So I'm not on the island anymore, so I'm not on Aotea Great Barrier Island. And now I'm based in Ngāmutu, New Plymouth, so up in Te Eka Māui, the North Island, and really wasn't my long-term plan. I've been very homesick for Te Waipanamu and South Island. That's kind of where my heart is. Based up on the west side, and it's an incredible, beautiful place. And I said if I was ever going to live in the north, that's where I was going to live. And obviously, the universe kind of took heed to that and thought, great, we'll shove them over there. There I am now. So we were on Aotea Great Barrier Island. I was centre manager for Hillary Outdoors on there, running an outdoor centre, welcoming wonderful people coming onto the island doing outdoor education experiences. And COVID seemed to hang on like grim death for Auckland, and we were in the Auckland Council, so we got shut down. We were kind of locked up for about 4 months, and so that basically killed us. And so we were all made redundant. And I tell you what, being made redundant is a fascinating experience to go through, and I'm sure many people suffered this over COVID period and sometimes in their life. And, the experience of being made redundant is a challenging experience. It confronts... lots of things to you, and you end up spending a lot of time navel gazing and questioning your own self worth. So it really does kind of put you on the back foot. And it was a tough time. So we got made redundant, and then had to make a life choice decision on what we were going to do with our lives.
Because that trip was only a short term trip, in the first place.
Yes.
You promised yourselves you're coming back to Port Chalmers.
Absolutely. And still miss the place. We own a house down here, so we really miss it. So that was the unfortunate thing is that we couldn't just jump on the vehicle and come straight back, because I had no work to come back to. Actually, when I went off the island, this is how it ran. Like, we got made redundant, and then I said to Jo, my wife, I said, well, look, you know, we could have stayed a little longer, but I said, look, we need to sort our lives out, and we packed up the house. I took garden leave. I learned all about this garden leave thing and said, I'm going to go sort my life out. So we had a couple of weeks of paid leave. And And then we packed up the house. The staff were amazing, like outstanding people, and they came and helped us pack up our house. It was just brilliant. And then we hopped on the ferry, and the van was packed, loaded boats, and we had no clue where we were going. We're on the ferry, and we were going, And I said to Joe, well, I know someone in Birkenhead, so I'll give them a call. And halfway across the ferry crossing, we gave them a call and said, yeah. So we ended up turning right as we came off the ferry and drove there, and then they put us up for a couple of weeks or so. So we were, in some ways, it confronts you in a very interesting way, because suddenly now you're out of work, you are struggling to find out your direction, and you do tend to lean on people a little bit, you know, and for that help. And we're very, very grateful for the people that helped us along the way. There's no doubt about it. Like, I can't thank them enough. You know, Ray and Ginny Hollingsworth up in Auckland, they put us up and we were there. They were keen for us to rent the house and stay. But we stayed there for a couple of weeks, two or three weeks, actually. And I was burnt out.
Now, we quite regularly do that for holidays, that we get to the bottom of the driveway and say, right, which way should we turn? But we know we've got a place to come back to. That must be quite scary.
Yeah.
When you don't, or is it empowering?
I think what I've learned is it's a hard one to kind of... I mean, you need to kind of turn these things around, and it's all about perspective, and it's all about how you position yourself. And at the time, I was very burnt out from the work, and I was very burnt out from the process. And my job on Barrier was to look after my staff. And you know, I'm sure, I know I did things well and I didn't do things well, as we all do. But I made sure that my staff were looked after and they had direction on where to go. That was my main concern. And then... And then wrapping up the business as well as I professionally could before I left. But interestingly, then you're faced with your own kind of understanding of where you are in the world and what's happening. And so we had a home, but we couldn't go back to it, so we were homeless. And so we had nowhere to live. And because, you know, and the rental, the people in our house were just wonderful people, you know, this last, you know, and we would have to have given them 90 days sort of notice. So being in that position, and I'm sure many people and the listeners have, you know, there'll be people out there that have faced this, is that suddenly you're homeless, you're jobless, you haven't got any money coming in, and you've still got bills to pay, and you've still got to put food on the table. So, we were very lucky because... We knew people that would help us, and I think that, but it still challenged us a lot on where to next. And so we, you know, suddenly you're not in that familiar area where you call home. You're living with other people, so you're having to kind of fit into their cycles and rhythms a little bit, even though they're amazing and they say do what you want to do. And then you also realise that actually you're running out of income. And so you kind of have to grasp with where are you going to have to get some work and how you're going to do. So we, you know, I applied for some jobs down south and had interviews. I probably had a job possibly, you know, that I could have got, but I actually pulled out because I rang them up and I said, look, I'm going to pull out of this job because I'm so burnt out, I'm not good for you. And I didn't feel it was fair on them for me to come down in the kind of in the mental state that I was at. So that was my ticket back south. But I had to pull the pin because it just wasn't right for them. It wouldn't have been fair. So kind of cut myself on the umbilical cord to stay in the north. And then we knew a colleague in New Plymouth, Naumutu, and she heard about what had happened. And so she could offer me 2 days a week of work and Joe nothing. and Joe, my wife, was keen to go back to New Plymouth and have a look at, so we decided to travel down there and see what happened. We're still there. So we lived in a classroom for 3 months after that. A mattress on the floor, Often it was an outdoor centre. It's called TOPEC, Taranaki Outdoor Education Pursuit Centre, and you know, at night there was the school kids that were there playing basketball outside 11 o'clock at night. Going, but again, we're very grateful to have a roof over our head, and we got a bit of work, and the work grew, and we worked there. I worked there on and off for contract. For a year and a bit, and then Joe worked there for almost nearly 2 years, sort of thing. She got a more permanent job.
So there's that mantra, I'm pretty sure you've used it, that you can be cold, wet and miserable,
yes.
Or you can just be cold and wet.
Exactly. Yes,
so
exactly.
Did you feel that outdoor education mindset kicking in?
Yeah, I think the big thing is underlyingly, when you're, and I wouldn't call us at the bottom of the barrel. I think I was at the bottom of the barrel when I got a divorce, but and that's a different barrel. But I think when you're in that sort of state, outdoor education, there's no doubt that for all those years, then you get resourceful, and you also need to look at your opportunities, and it's the learning. The learning from all that experience is that when one door closes, and I know this sounds cliche, but when one door closes, there are many doors that are open. You just need to be able to see them. And it's all about how you position yourself and your perspective on things. And it's very, very hard when you've come out of something called a redundancy where you don't feel that you've been valued. And the way the redundancy process played out, it wasn't well done, and there was many things I think that they could have done that could have taken me along the road almost to have said at the end of it, saying, "Well, okay, that's fine. I'll give up my job. That's fine. I've got to go because it's not going to work financially." And that was, I think, that is a disparity between people in management, and I was in middle management, and they play this game where they, in this sense, they just didn't tell me what was going on. In fact, I didn't know we were going to be made redundant until that morning. And then half an hour later, my staff knew it, and they had a thing on it. And, you know, all they needed to do was really, I was half an hour away of a flight, go sit down and look at the books and go, look, this is where we're at. You know, we're probably going to have to close this down. What have you got any new ideas? And actually, I did have ideas on how to save this thing. But at the end, the way the whole situation was unraveled and given out to me, I just thought, stuff you. You know, I'd had enough. Mm. And so I didn't offer any options. I thought, well, you know, you've already made your decision, so I'm just not going to fight this at all. But I actually had alternatives to have our staff and employment on the island, to be able to kind of save us a whole lot of money. I had lots of ideas, but...
You always have lots of ideas.
I do. But whether they were any good is kind of relevant and irrelevant, because out of the 100 ideas, you might have one good idea, or it sparks off on something else. And so I think, to their detriment, I would say that they lost out. But you know, they were doing their own thing. Yeah, there was a lack of communication, I think.
Well, what sort of good idea have you got for the first song today?
Well, actually, I was thinking about this as you asked me, and I think Louis Armstrong, you know, the interesting thing is I've been listening to a lot of podcasts because I now run my own business and I do a lot of driving around the country. And interestingly, the one philosophical and professional drive I have is to connect people in my work back to nature and back to the environment. That's so important for me. That's the drive of my work. And it's interesting because I think that Western society, especially Western society, not Indigenous cultures, but they have really, you know, it's not a very healthy take on life at the moment. And we've siloed ourselves away from nature. So bad that the health of general humans is not very good. I heard a stat the other day that 93.7% of Americans, I don't know what it's like for New Zealanders, but 93.7% of Americans spend their time indoors. And that's in a vehicle, in an office, staring at computers, all that sort of stuff. So that's a horrendous figure. And it's quite interesting because, you know, my life has kind of revolved around outdoor education and taking people into the outdoors. And what we face, you know, if you look at the media, people are driven by fear. And at a molecular level, at a mitochondrial level, our bodies respond to that. And we also, we live a life where, you know, we live in artificial light. And we spend, generally the masses spend far less time outside. And if you look at the world, you know, you only have to look at the polarities of the world, like hot and cold. You look at the seasons. And so we've got beautiful cycles of seasons like, you know, the obvious autumn, winter, spring, summer, the cycles of the moon, the cycles of the tide, everything. And you also have to look at what generally people are eating for food, for example. A lot of the food is processed. So I think Western society is very unhealthy. And you only have to look at the what nature feeds us, because we get our energy from all of that, right? So it's a no-brainer. You know, we get energy from light, we get energy from our food. I think it's some ridiculous 73,000 kilograms of food that we ingest in our lifetime. We eat far too much and far too often. But also we get energy from sound, all sorts of things. But we also get energy, you know, you only have to look at the light that hits the leaves that are transferring energy into energy that we can survive by in our world. And so if you take all that, it's a no-brainer that we need to look after the environment, because that's what's feeding us. In fact, we are the environment, and we're not a separate entity from the environment. We are part of the environment. So why the hell are we not looking after it better? And we have this thin veil, like a wind jacket, of atmosphere around the world, and we should not be polluting it as much as we are. So we've got to radically change the way that we look at things. And you might look at you know, the law of commons and consider, well, okay, well, you know, Tom, Dick, and Harry are doing this, so why shouldn't I do it? What difference am I going to make? But you do make a difference if you make those decisions. So where's your place that you can actually hold yourself to some level of integrity and make choices yourself? And if you make choices yourself, which is the best way to start from yourself, then actually that radiates out to other people. And so, yeah, you can get engulfed in doom and gloom that actually what you're doing doesn't make a difference, but it does. And so we need to keep on living in that sort of not rose-tinted, but an optimistic view of what we can do to change our whole living sort of thing and how we can change, you know, change what's around us. And we do that by starting with ourselves. So that's why I chose that song. That's a long-winded answer to why I chose that song.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands, saying, how do you do? They're really saying, I love you. I hear babies crying, much more than I never knew. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Yes, I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
It's impossible not to sing along with that song.
Yeah, I know. It's a fantastic song, absolutely.
So, you've got a mission of getting people back to nature. What are you actually doing now? What's keeping Andy busy?
Yeah. So now I changed my business name to Adventure Lens NZ because that reflected better what I'm doing. So I do... to sum it up, I kind of do four macros. So I coach and teach in the outdoors. So I'm working with people that are already working in industry to get their outdoor qualifications. And so it's phenomenal what is happening around the country. So my job has actually opened up my eyes to what's happening around the country. And some people are doing some great work around the country, but they often end up in these places that are running camps and things like that don't have quolls. So I train people to do their NZQA, either kayaking, rock climbing, or sea kayaking, or bush instruction. Mainly those are the ones that I focus in on, and I run training courses. And then I have a 6-week stand down period from that, where they've got to go away and kind of practice their stuff. And then 6 weeks or more, it's often more, then I can actually go back and do the assessment. And so it's a different game. I actually do the assessment. And we're doing, they're getting double qualifications, which is awesome. So they're getting an NZQA level 4 or 5 strand. And then, so that's for life, but they're also getting a New Zealand Outdoor Instructors Association qualification, which is industry recognised. And the cool thing about the two things is that NZQA, when you get a strand qualification, you'll have that for life. The disadvantage of that is that there's no checks and balances on that. So you could be 20 years down the track and not used it, but you still got it. But the great thing about NZOIA is that they have a 4-year revalidation scheme. And I think that's an outstanding process, because you have to, once every 4 years, you can get an assessor to work with you and get a sign-off. And then the other 4 years, you have to attend a refresher program, which means it's upping your professional level. So it's keeping you, it's checking that you're actually operating at that minimum level and qualification. So I do that, and then I also do commercial photography, and I also do now commercial videography as well. So we run another platform, which is Outdoor Leader Training, and we put on, we've got 165 videos on there now, and that helps people who want to learn how to coach and teach in the outdoors, and so they can go in their own time. And there's a subscription or a monthly subscription, or if they're doing a strand, they get access to it as part of it, and then they can watch these videos on how to teach whatever it is. And my biggest client is AdventureWorks, which is based up in Auckland, so I'm kind of doing that through them. So that's my main client. I work through them. And then a lot of the photography is through my own business and what have you. And then I teach mountaineering. So, I mean, this year I'm contracted to the New Zealand Alpine Club in Wellington, and I'm running, overseeing 3 Alpine programs this year for them. So I'll be up on Ruapehu and doing that. So that's kind of my life, really. It does involve a lot of travelling. And admittedly, that is burning the carbon footprint, but then my car's very economical, which is great. And I'm as economical as I can be around that. But then, you know, the trade-off is that I'm raising the bar with people and raising the professional standard within an industry. That's my little input into that. And the other thing is that it's my opportunity to be able to coach and teach professionals on how to coach and teach other people on how to connect with nature. So I can come up with lots of coaching ideas on how to do that, and then I can instill that in, and they take that away, and then that, you know, it's the old adage of, one person, you know, gets this experience, and they go tell five others, and then they go tell 15 others at a dinner table, and so on and so on. So it spreads like wildfire on these things, which is fantastic. It's really good.
Joe, your wife's
yes.
master's thesis showed that you had to not just take people to nature, you had to actively engage them in it for them to care.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So and how do you get people beyond that,
yes,
here is a place where I am?
Yeah, it's interesting because, so I'm dealing with people that want to work as professionals, and I think the tipping point is often when they do their assessment, because they have to raise a bar. Now, they have to put in the training, they have to raise a bar. So that takes a lot of personal investment, and they have to demonstrate certain things to meet a minimum standard on a qualification. Now, to do that, there's also a personal journey on that, and there's personal emotional investment in that as well. And not everybody passes. So it can be, when there's personal growth, there's some personal pain that comes along with it. And so I guess, you know, they get invested in it in that way. So that's probably where I think I'm having more success in converting or encourage them and opening the doors of suggestion where they can connect with nature. Look, I've just come out of the Kaimanawa range, and I ran a bush one assessment. And this is after I've done some training sometime with them last year. And the coolest thing, I did show this one person this thing, but the coolest thing she did was right at the start, after doing, kind of breaking the ice with her group, she got her group, who I was assessing, so she was teaching some students we'd organised, and she got them to just go quietly into the forest and stand and breathe. And it sounds really simple, but they just spent 5 minutes quietly in the forest, just observing and connecting back into the forest. Now, that was from the training that I did with her. So that's just a living, breathing example of how, and she was so excited. She was so excited about learning about the different plants. And in the meantime, from that training to assessment, she'd spent time researching the medicinal values of plants and how it all connected. So that then is, you know, I can't tell people what to do, but I can suggest it. And so now she's connected with nature. She's very much invested in it. And now she's trying to suggest that to many other people. So it's starting to spread.
I read something a few weeks ago. I've forgotten who it was from. Mm. From an American, I think, who was arguing that we've got the language wrong, that we shouldn't be going out for a hike.
Yes.
Because it suggests we're just like going through this thing.
Yes, yes.
And it should be okay to just go for a wander.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's an interesting concept because it's the same as many people aren't good at resting and having a break. They think that they need to be kind of on the go all the time. Mind you, you'd argue that maybe I'm like, maybe like that as well, but... I just life is too exciting not to be. But I need. I'm one of those people that need to learn how to rest. And it's the same thing with going into a forest or going into that's where outdoor education needs to mature in the sense that it's not about using the outdoors as a gymnasium. It's actually about understanding that when you go into the outdoors, in any outdoors. Is you need to give yourself time to reflect and to take it in. Like there's times that you can go to a bat out of hell from A to B, and that's fine, you know. But there's also times that you need to be able to just slow down the pace and actually look and take in, and then kind of consider what you're engaging with and what that process is. I mean, the forest, for example, is just an incredible living process. And And so, you know, I know, I don't, you know, the research that's been done on forests, I mean, I think forests are almost more mature than humans in some ways, because when one tree is not doing so well, other trees give that tree nutrients to be able to flourish. When a tree falls over, it doesn't die immediately because it's given life through the mycelial network, and the amount of plants that'll come off that dead tree is incredible. Now, I mean, for an example of an amazing ecosystem, a forest is just one of those amazing things, and it supports each other. And so if you go cut down the main dominant tree, you are making that forest sick. And I think that's, you know, that my theory on Kauri forest is why it's so sick up in the north, is because too much Kauri was decimated in the logging era. And, you know, again, that was humanity's short-term tunnel vision on productivity. However, it's made the forest really sick, and we know we've got Kauri dieback. Well, Kauri forests are weak because there's not many of them. And so the strength of the forest is struggling because it hasn't got each other to be able to support each other. And so, it, you know, a forest doesn't silo things like we do in Western society. Our health system is sick because in the health system, we silo things incredibly. I disagree with the health system at the moment. Our health system is about keeping you alive as long as possible. When our dog passed away last year, I said to the vet, could I come and see you when it's my time? I want some of that blue juice. Because we're more humane to our animals than we are to each other. And we keep each other alive as long as possible in painful states often. And it just eludes me why the hell we do this. So we kind of had this, I know I've jumped around a little bit, but we had this idea that we're an entity. We're not. We're a living process. And so forests are living processes. And it's always dynamic, and it's always biologically dynamic and changing. And so are we. You know, we're not the same person we were when we were 17 years old. And we're always changing. And if we think ourselves as a process, that's a great invigorating way to look at ourselves, because then that means that if we're a process, then we can make changes in the future. Well, you know, it's not overnight. You know, if you want to, you know, the old adage is like, you know, if I want to get fit, well, that's not a goal, but, you know, or I want to lose weight. Well, it doesn't happen overnight. You've got to go and figure out the food that you're intaking, the way that you're sleeping, and what sort of exercise and output you're doing, and then it happens over a long period of time, but it's a process. And so that's because we're not a separate thing. You know, it takes a while for it all to happen. And if you look at the process of a forest, wow, it's a slow process, but it is evolving all the time. So I think that's, you know, that's where outdoor education can help people understand and come back to connecting with the environment and connecting with nature. And if people can shift towards that, then hopefully people can actually invest back in their own little places and make sure that they kind of play their part in regards to not creating devastation in the world, but actually doing some good in the world and changing things.
Bubble sprite of the forest of Orokanui, Dunedin's favourite goddess, Tahu Mackenzie.
Kia ora koutou, ngā mihi aroha nui kia koutou, ko tāwahau. I hope you're all having a great day, beautiful superstars in your beloved universes. And I really hope, wherever you are and whatever's happening around you, this journey that we're all on together is helping to more fully remind you how perfect, how precious, how unique, and how, like all life, when you are born, you bring unique gifts and skills into this universe to share. Thank you. So, I know that for the last several years things have been very tough for us all and for everybody. The pandemic really shook up our perspective of our own identities, our own community, our own beautiful paradise planet, the powers that be and the structures that we took for granted within our daily lives, so much had to change. And I think we should all feel very proud of how well we handled that change. And look where we are now. So I just had a really beautiful dream where I was showing a group of students around Orokonoi, but it was different. It was different on the outside. And we went to look at traps and all sorts that were around the outside of the building. And by the time we'd done that, you know, they hadn't gone into the sanctuary and they were having tea in the restaurant that was there. And I said to them, come on, let's go in just for 20 minutes and it'd be great. So we did, and how wonderful it was and how beautiful it was. And there were kaka flying in the sky. The kaka came down and they landed in a tree next to us, and one of them came and was very inquisitive to me and very affectionate towards me. It was just a little baby kaka, very sweet. And yeah, it was a really beautiful dream to have. So I think if we can remember our dreams and record our dreams, they give us such a helpful insight into where we're at and what we are needing to do. And sometimes they can help us, if we allow them, to reframe a situation so that we can see it on a deeper level and understand that change is always taking place within us. This is a powerful movement of our soul in our life, and it's best to trust it. It's best to allow that change if we can. And I think for all of us, the pandemic did change us, and that's okay. And the more that we turn and we see and we ask ourselves, who are you now? What do you need now? That's really important. So I really hope for you, you have the opportunity to record and remember your dreams if you feel that it would be helpful. And I also really hope that you're having these moments in your life where you're fundamentally needing to make a choice. And if you can make that choice with as much love and compassion and care and respect for yourself and for those around you, this is really, really why we're here. And I hope that you're able to see the patterns in your life, the movements of love in your life, and have a sense that you are embraced by a whole ecosystem, a whole web of life. And we're all doing our best. We're all co-evolving. And this helps us to give ourselves self-compassion, which is so important. So a huge mahi to Sam and the whole Blowing Bubbles team for having me. It's been really, really beautiful to have this time with you today, and I look forward to talking to you again soon. Thanks so much. Akite.
You're listening to Blowing Bubbles. I'm talking with our good friend Andy Thompson. You're talking about how we need to have time to reflect in the forest, and that the forest is, well, time to reflect generally, and the forest being a system, being a process. And I was thinking of when I go for walks in the forest, my wife does have to spend quite a lot of time waiting for me because I'm lying on the ground taking a picture of a fungi. And I suspect good, it's the you? Same for you.
Yes, it is. My wife's very patient with me. It's amazing.
But how do you get that across to those teenagers, people in their early 20s, the gung-ho,
yes,
to stop and...
Yeah. I think everybody's in a different trajectory and everybody's on a different journey. When you look at 17 to 20-odd-year-olds, I mean, if I look at myself at that age, I was always, you know, aren't you immortal when you're at that stage? You know, it's just a phase in life that you go through. But one of the things is that that I think you can do as an educator is that you can plant seeds. And it doesn't mean that the seed will germinate at the time. It's quite interesting, you know. For me, I talk to students that I have taught in the past, and I've seen them many years later. In fact, actually, I met two students that I had taught years ago here, up in New Plymouth, and the change in their perspective in life had dramatically occurred, and they'd gone through some struggles in their life, but the great thing is that they were still talking about the experiences that we had had on their program, and it still resonated with them. And I think that's a testimony to how powerful an experience of in an outdoor education program can have to young people in the future. And I think until people have experienced that, then it's not until maybe later that they kind of resonate with it. So I think the best thing, you know, some people are very savvy and they get it really early. Other people have things that they need to battle with in their own lives. And some of that is kind of bestowed on them from family circumstance, whānau circumstances or personal circumstances, and they need to kind of work through that in their own beat, in their own journey. But as they travel through life, there is a time where you kind of start to have a different perspective on life. And so, yeah, I guess it's understanding that at that age, maybe you don't get the radical change that you would love to see. But I think I have an indefatigable faith that everybody, and certainly at that age, if they have an outdoor educational experience of some sort, if it's done well, it can have a real powerful long-term effect on people. And I think that's where you plant the seed. And then eventually it'll germinate in some sort of fashion in the future. So we as educators have a moral responsibility with our professional teaching to understand that you don't get results often at the time, but you are setting the scene for the future. And if you can do that, it's incredibly powerful for people. And if you understand that, then you want to do a really good job because you want to plant the seed well. So when it does germinate, then it flourishes, and it kind of overtakes, and people get it, you know. Everybody's on their own beat and their own journey, and they've got to see it for themselves, yeah.
Do you have that same faith in humanity to look after the areas that you love, your playground, also your workplace? When we see climate change pushing glaciers to the brink, the monoculture pines we seem to be putting everywhere, the wildling pines, the fact that, as you say about the kauri, it's the remnant forests struggling to operate as systems, particularly if they're grazed. We're doing an awful lot of dumb stuff.
Yeah, we are as humanity, and I think as a global species, we're not very good. I think as a global species, at the moment, we've got a long way to mature. Long, long way. And if you look at the political climate at the moment, it can do your head in, because you've got Russia, you've got the political madness in America, you've got the two significant wars, let alone the other little wars that are going on. I mean, I know, what's the guy, Neil deGrasse or Grayson or whatever his name is, you know, he says, you know, if a bunch of aliens passed by Earth and they were one... they were one DNA ahead of us, because we're only one DNA off a chimpanzee. So if they were one more, you know, they probably would have been doing Pythagoras at 1 year old. And they looked at our Earth and go, you know, there's all these dividing lines, and people have divided things off and they're fighting over this. It's just ridiculous. You know, they would just walk away. They would like turn the left-hand corner and go onto the next planet. It can do your head in, but... yeah, and there are massive problems globally as a human species. But I do think that you have to park some things, because if you think globally, it'll do your head in, like I said. But I think you have to think what's in your circles of power, and what can you do? And at the end of the day, right, when I'm going to finish my life, the best thing I can do is look back on a life, on my life, and try and figure out that I every day woke up and tried to be a better version of myself. And that gives me faith that I lived my life well. I've made my fair share of mistakes in life, absolutely, like I'm sure lots of people have. And that sometimes plagues me, and plagues my head on what mistakes I've done and what I could have done better. But that also makes me as well, makes me a stronger person. And I've got to look back on that and go, well, actually, I woke up today and I can do better. And you know, the paradox in life is that we're mortal. The thing that gives meaning to my life is that I'm going to die. If I was immortal, then meaning to life would almost become meaningless. And so I'm gifted with this life. It's an incalculable miracle that I was born, and I'm not going to take it for granted. Life is just too beautiful not to. And so we have choice. And we're very, very, very lucky to have that choice to be able to do the best that we can. And so every time, every turn that you make in life, you've got to make these decisions. And, you know, I know that food, water, shelter are kind of key things. Other people would argue the internet, but Wi-Fi. But, you know, those three things, you know, people can be up, their backs up against the wall, and they have very limited in the way that they can choose to live their life. But you still have some level of choice in life, and you've got to make that. You've got to make those good choices every day, the best way you possibly can. So it's, you know, you can get engulfed in the big picture and go, "Oh my God, the world's falling apart." Absolutely, but I think you've got to turn that around, and you've got to look at where are your circles of influence, and come back to that, and what can I do? Because I'm gifted with this beautiful gift of being alive. I've got a very small speck of time, and it's a wonderful thing to be alive. So don't squander it. Don't waste it. You know, and think about what you're shoveling down your gullet. Try to eat natural, real foods. And look, I mean, honestly, yesterday I had a bad diet day. I know I did. And you had those days. But, you know, start again every time.
Talking about coming back, what brings you back to Otapuhti?
Oh, my gosh, I miss this place. I love the people and I love the environment here. I made a pact to come back and see my kids and my grandchildren. I have three grandchildren, so I'm very, very lucky. So even though I can't live back here at the moment, so three times a year I've made a pact to come back. This is one of them. And so come back to see them. And also this weekend, Fire and Ice, which is my old Waka Ama club, are running a Waka Ama race. And so I've managed to get into more than I can bargain for. I thought I could get into at least one race. Now I've got into three. So a good colleague and friend of mine has put me in a double with him. So we're doing a double 10K race tomorrow. And then in the afternoon, I'm doing a singles 10K race. And then on Sunday afternoon, I'm doing a 20K Waka 6 race. And then I've been asked to join a team to go to Hawaii and race in late August. And so on Monday, we're going out for a training run and then coffee afterwards. So that's in Hawaii. It's going to be a 28K race and a 6K race. So I'm going over to there to race. So
I think you're allowed to have a bad diet day today then.
I don't know. I'm going to be pretty tired by the weekend. So yeah, we own a house down here. So I've come to see the house and get a few things out of the garage sort of thing. So that's my rationale for coming back.
What song are we going out to?
Well, actually, I looked it up. It's Phil Collins, and it was I Can't Turn Back the Years. And actually, I probably better look this up. Did have it here. Can't Turn Back the Years. Yeah, the reason I chose this is it's an interesting thing because You can go forward in time by going faster than light. Apparently, this is the scientific theory. And apparently, you can't go back in time. And it's interesting because you often kind of consider, oh, gosh, it'd be great. Imagine if I knew what I knew when I was 20 years old and what I would do. But you can't go back in time. And it's interesting because you often wish you could go back in time and make different decisions and do better or whatever you did. Or, oh, gosh, I wouldn't do that. And so, however, whatever decisions you make in life defines you. And if it's good or bad, what you need to do is take that, learn from it, be accountable for it and accept it and go, well, okay, well, I really stuffed up there. And you can't go back and change it. So the best thing you can do is go forward and be a better version of yourself every morning, every night. Just try and look, just try and do better. And you can. That's a great thing. You can wake up tomorrow morning and you can go, well, it might be just a millimetre, but I'm going to do this better today. And that's the great thing about life, is that you can actually make a difference. And every day you can change things just slowly. And it's like trying to change a big ship. You know, it's little by little that you make the change. And if you do that over a long period of time, you'd be amazed what you can do and how you can change yourself and others over a period of time. It's a wonderful thing.
You've been listening to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. We're broadcast on Otago Access Radio every Wednesday afternoon at 3 and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz. We are supported by Otago Polytechnic. We had a contribution today from Tahu McKenzie. I've been joined today by Andy Thompson. Thank you very much, Andy.
You're welcome. Yeah, wonderful to be here.
I'm Samuel Mann. That was Blowing Bubbles. We hope you enjoyed the show. Mā te wā.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.